From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, fighting off an asteroid or a comet. That's what we'll talk about. Here's what's happening. Well, lots of pain in New York as they have had their biggest one-day jump in virus deaths ever. New York State recorded 731 new corona deaths, making it its biggest single-day jump. The state's death toll since the beginning of this outbreak last month that they think when they started recording, 5,489 people. The alarming surge in deaths comes even as new hospital admissions have dropped in average over the several days, a possible harbinger of the outbreak finally leveling off. I contacted the New York City Health Department to try to find out how many people have died so far from the flu in New York City. Nobody returned my emails at all, so we'll keep checking now. Dozens of people who are diagnosed as recovered from coronavirus in South Korea have apparently tested positive again for the virus after leaving quarantine. Seems like it just doesn't go away. China reported, if you believe it, no coronavirus deaths on Tuesday, the first time since it started publishing daily figures in January. Lots of questions about 5G and the possibility that it is really enhancing the coronavirus. Telecom masts that enable the next generation of wireless communication were set on fire in the United Kingdom in recent days, apparently by people motivated by the theory that the technology helps spread the coronavirus. We'll be checking in on that story. Locals in Wuhan, China, where the coronavirus pandemic originated, have heard screams coming from funeral home furnaces, and some treated in hospitals say they saw workers putting living coronavirus patients in body bags. Apparently, what they are hearing are patients and people being burned in funeral home furnaces alive, elderly people, because they believe they're less likely to survive the infection. If this is a true story, that is macabre, to be sure. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com with us. John, tell us your thoughts on what's going on here.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest news today is, you know, whether it's peaking or it's getting there, we know eventually this thing is going to level off and that curve is going to flatten. But the real issue that has really come out today is the complicity of the World Health Organization, basically bought off and paid for by China. Tedros, the director general of the UN, his wife has worked on the WHO. Xi Jinping's wife has worked on the WHO. And when Tedros, he's an Ethiopian, was put up for the job, he was against a British guy that they really wanted to have there. But Xi lobbied against him and managed to get, you know, Tedros. China's, you know, spent enormous amounts of money in Ethiopia as well. But the real issue is that Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, this is a UN watchdog for worldwide infectious disease, among other things, treating all kinds of illnesses around the world, has covered for China, basically, and allowed China to get away with this unleashing, this plague on humanity that's now caught 1,431,000 cases worldwide with 82,000 deaths, 400,000, almost one-third of those cases in the United States, with over 12,000, almost 13,000 deaths, $30 trillion of wealth lost in the world because of China and the World Health Organization. This joker who's running the WHO must go immediately. And finally, Trump said something about it today, but it's long overdue. They knew about this epidemic in November and December, did absolutely nothing. And it was Tedros that made that snarky remark February, around February 8th, that nobody should be banning flights to any country where it's unnecessary to impact, you know, world commerce and so forth, Well, he was referring to the travel ban that Trump imposed on January 31st to China, and then followed it a week later, or less than a week later, with Europe and then the UK and Ireland. Now, you look at the complicity that has gone on by this World Health Organization. How could anybody have any confidence in them anymore to do anything to control this any virus outbreak? And China, I mean, has never accepted responsibility for basically unleashing this plague out of a bioweapons lab in the institute, their national weapons laboratory in Wuhan, China, basically, and leaking this on the world, denying that they had it, and then sending millions of Chinese people infected to Europe, to the United States, to Georgia, all over the world during the Chinese New Year. And that's how this all happened. And the one you can blame is the World Health Organization, and it's time for heads to roll.
John, you are spot on that one. Stock futures falling slightly after a volatile session of the markets. Overall, the markets have been rebounding a little bit, but what's that mean? Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Mish, what do you think about the economy these days? What's going on?
George, I was really hoping that things are starting to flatten here with the coronavirus. It looked like they were. We have another escalation here now. I still think, I'm optimistic here, George, that things are going to peak within the next couple of weeks. The question is, how long do we stay at that peak, or does it start coming down dramatically? Everyone wants to know the answer to that question. Everyone's guessing. Everyone's got an opinion on it. I'm just going to say I don't know. What I'm doing, however, is looking at what's happening with layoffs and unemployment. The just in the leisure and hospitality category, we've got 16 million workers, George. Now, and about 10 million of those are in restaurant or bar work. Those are closed nationally.
Yep.
I'm thinking we're going to lose 80% of those jobs. I don't think that's unreasonable.
A lot of places will not reopen when they're told they can reopen.
Right. And then there's the St. Louis Fed came out and did a study. They had 56% of the jobs that they said were safe, and they had 46% that weren't safe. You know, there's a middle ground in there somewhere. And so I wrote a post, how high will the unemployment rate rise in April? And I went through and I put percentages on these categories, the retail trade jobs, for example, the Target stores and those. Those workers are shut down, but the grocery store workers, which are part of that category, aren't. But anyway, my bottom line conclusion to all of this, and I crunched the numbers a couple of different ways, are 20. I'm looking at 20% unemployment.
Jeez.
George, we can't stay there that long without a disaster. So I'm really hoping, George, that this virus turns down.
We got to get America back to work one way or another, Mitch. Even if for some reason the virus doesn't slow down, we got to get people back, or we're going to have a bigger problem.
We have to figure out a way to do that, George. Yes.
Absolutely. Mish, thank you. Appreciate it. Mish Shedlock, our registered investment advisor. Real name is Michael, of course. Did you have a chance tonight to see the pink moon, the full moon? Well, I ran out there and saw it. It wasn't pink when I looked at it, but what a gorgeous full moon, this rare pink moon, as they call it, graces the skies over the world tonight as our rocky neighbor makes a close pass with the Earth. Really, it looks huge. Some people think the cosmic show is linked to the appearance of a beautiful flower in the U.S., while others think it is the end of the world as we know it. A pink moon is a rare result of several space phenomena occurring all at once. Up next, John Rappaport back with us. No more fake news. We're going to get his take on the coronavirus. Wait till you hear what he has to say next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. John Rappaport with us has worked as an investigative reporter for 38 years. He has published articles on medical research, health, and politics for publications all over the United States and Europe. He is the author of three books, AIDS, Inc., The Secret Behind Secret Societies, and The Ownership of All Life. He has delivered lectures to audiences around the world on modern epidemics, medical research fraud, individual freedom, and the forgotten power of imagination to create futures outside the boundaries of what we call the accepted status quo. John, it's a great time to have you. As a matter of fact, I can't think of a better time to have you on the program. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, George. And here we are again.
Oh, my gosh. And this one, there's something weird here, John. There's something very, very strange. I got a million questions for you tonight. But give us your overview. When you first heard about this, what did you start thinking? And when was that? Back in, was it December for you?
I think so. Maybe near the end of December. The dates are a little hazy in my mind because I've been writing nonstop ever since then. But what I've said over and over again is the key to this one, as opposed to the other dud epidemics that many of which you and I have discussed in the past, is that overnight China locked down 50 million people in three cities. That was the key, and I wrote at the time, China has broken the ice. They have created a new model that's never been done before in human history on that scale. And now, public health officials at the World Health Organization, the CDC, the Gates Foundation, et cetera, who have been waiting for the opportunity to do this, have gotten their signal. And they are now saying, we can do this too. That was the key. And I saw it immediately as the most dangerous possible thing that could have happened.
And now, when you say they locked down three cities, we know Hong Kong for sure. There were protests in Wuhan. They were just trying to control their population. They could not. So is it your thoughts that they had this virus that they've been probably working on for years, and they decided, let's dump them on this population and shut down these protesters? Because, quite frankly, we haven't heard a thing about the protests in Hong Kong now since this all happened.
Yes, but it's more complicated than that. I mean, certainly that was one of their motives, to shut down the protests. But the protests were really about unprecedented levels of toxic air in these cities, especially in Wuhan. That's what it was all about. And that creates pneumonia, which just coincidentally became the number one so-called prime cardinal feature of the, quote, epidemic. So that what you had there was virus, again used as a cover story, to obscure crimes against the people that were injuring them. And of course, these protests do not happen lightly in Chinese cities, because people can be arrested, disappeared, you never hear from them again. So the breakout of people on the streets last summer was all about the pollution. So I began to dig into this research and discovered a study that indicated, this was out of Yale, that the toxic elements, the combinations in the air, were unprecedented in human history, both from early industrial age and modern industrial age all at once. And so what the Chinese regime eventually did was they decided, and this was published in the press, that they were not going to test directly for a virus. They were simply going to do CT scans, CAT scans on people. And if they found pneumonia, they were going to automatically diagnose them as coronavirus cases, which is completely absurd, because pneumonia has many causes, including polluted air.
Right.
And about 300,000 people a year in China routinely die from pneumonia. that immediately led me to suspect, did they ever really discover a new virus? Does the test for this virus that's now spread all over the world, the test, that is, the PCR test, really detect an actively infectious agent? And what I discovered, and I have the article right up on my screen right now that I wrote and published a couple of weeks ago, in the own words of the World Health Organization, the CDC, the FDA, et cetera, they are admitting that a positive test may not indicate the cause of definite disease, that the test, in fact, can falsely show positive because it is reacting with irrelevant viruses, other germs that have nothing to do with this, that in fact the test can react to at least one other or other forms of coronavirus, which are relatively harmless. And yet all the case numbers, presumably, are based on this deeply inherently flawed test, which renders all those case numbers completely up in the air, irrelevant, mysterious, what have you. And so we're looking at a complex picture here, which is deeply disturbing, of the story of a virus that has been discovered, used to promote the economic destruction of nations all over the world.
Interesting, John, and something I've been fearing for a long time. Tell me a little bit about why it appears that these lockdowns and quarantines that are happening all over the planet in almost every state here in the United States doesn't appear to be working. People are still getting sick. The numbers, and the numbers are still far less than the flu deaths, but the numbers are going up when people are quarantined. I don't get it.
Yes, well, if you look at Italy, for example, as a prime example, and even New York, too, and other places, state of Washington, I've documented all of this. You've got very elderly people. They have long-term medical conditions, very serious. Some are close to dying. They've been treated with toxic medicines for years and years and years. Now they're told that there's a new deadly virus out there, so now they're terrified on top of that.
Right.
They show up on crutches and wheelchairs, ambulances, cars, on foot, whatever, to hospitals because of that. And they are presumptively, many of them, diagnosed with COVID-19 without any test at all, or with this deeply flawed test that I just mentioned. And now, in those hospitals which actually are overflowing, and not all hospitals are by a long shot, these doctors have nothing that they can possibly do except shunt these people into ICU wards because they believe that they're contagious. So naturally, the ICU wards are completely overflowing, and the picture is presented of, you know, a Holocaust in action.
Well, are these people coming in, John? Are they coming in sick, though, with something?
Many. Oh, yeah, sure. But they're sick from lung infections, pneumonia.
The flu.
For years and years and years. But now they're terrified. 70, 80-year-olds living in an apartment alone, say, in New York, right?
Sure.
Coughing at night, worried that their neighbors are going to turn them in, which has happened. So I'm going to turn myself in, they say, because they can't stand it anymore, and so they do. And they're already very ill. In Italy, the figures that their own government health institute is showing is that three people in the patient records that they've discovered so far, only three people as of maybe 4 days ago, could be tied, who are under 40 years of old, could be tied directly to a virus. Otherwise, we're talking about, you know, the median age of people supposedly dying from, quote, the coronavirus is 79.5 in Italy.
Stay with us, John. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about your research into this COVID-19 and what it means to all of us. When do we get America back to work? I'm beginning to sense something very nefarious here. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. John Rappaport with us. John, so are you saying that, first of all, this virus, whatever it may be, was concocted probably in a laboratory?
No, I'm not. Because if it was concocted in a laboratory, it's not that people are not trying to do this, but the weaponizers of germs in labs are faced with an enormous challenge, which they well understand, but many other people don't, and that is that viruses are intrinsically very unstable, and they mutate extremely rapidly.
Exactly.
So even if you began, researchers might say, okay, well, we have this super-duper virus here, and we're going to unleash it on the world. The effect would be completely unpredictable because of the mutation rate. So therefore, you could end up, let's say, killing 100 people or half the planet, you know, if you wanted to speculate about what might happen. That gives you a completely absurd scenario. The real scenario that is effective and produces exactly what we have now, which is horrendous in terms of economic destruction, is you tell a story about a virus. You don't really do the proper scientific steps to prove that you ever discovered a new virus in the first place, but you say you do. You say, oh, we discovered this unique coronavirus, which is very deadly, even though all the other coronaviruses are just that cause a common cold or whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in telling the story and then using a diagnostic test, which is completely useless but allows you to multiply case numbers, you corral many people under this umbrella term called COVID-19. Most of them are elderly. They're already in serious health trouble. They come into hospitals and so on and so forth. They make up the overwhelming number of statistics in mortality rate and so forth. Now you have the picture of a vast pandemic that is scaring everybody, and the publicity is wall to wall. And now you can lock down the populations and you can create this devastation that we are being visited with right now.
And it's conceivable, then, that these people who are dying, most of them could be dying from the normal flu, which is seasonal anyway.
Exactly. And if you start looking at flu-like illness statistics around the world, they're absolutely enormous. I keep writing them down because they keep changing. But, I mean, if you want to look at Italy, the last several years, the annual flu cases, they estimate at 5.3 million per year in Italy. 5.3 million per year in Italy, and 22,000 deaths, they say.
Which is huge.
Gigantic. And that's just in Italy alone, so you start extrapolating that out to the rest of the world.
Well, what I said, John, when this first started, when we started hearing about it, my complaint was with the major media creating the hysteria. Now, you tell me if I'm correct here. What I said back in December, January, was not once in my career have I ever heard a major media outlet report on the seasonal death flus on a daily basis for any flu that we've had. And the fact that, you know, they would say three people have died from the coronavirus. I'm saying 200 may have died today from the normal flu. So my whole issue was the hysteria the media was creating from this. Was I right?
Absolutely, George. That's absolutely right, and you and I have actually discussed this before when we were talking about swine flu and SARS and,
yep,
and so on. So if you consider the enormous numbers that we're talking about of people every year, this is not just one time, but every year who have these flu-like illnesses which have completely overlapping symptoms with what they're calling COVID-19 now, and the deaths and so forth, you would say, well, okay, well, let's see, the CDC and World Health Organization, they ought to be declaring a pandemic every year, right? I mean, that's what they're doing now with COVID-19, what they're calling COVID-19. So you would say, well, every year they ought to be doing this and locking down the planet, canceling all events,
mm-hmm.
and just devastating the economies. But they never mention it. They never talk about it. As you say, the media never report on it. All they do is say, get the flu vaccine, and that's about it. And that is the obvious comparison to make and exposes the gigantic lie. So it's very, very easy to move over all of these flu cases into the COVID category and all the pneumonia cases. That's another gigantic number of people on the planet that you can move into this category and say, well, it's COVID-19. And then you have the appearance and the story of a gigantic pandemic.
Yes.
And then the public health people at the World Health Organization and the CDC are ready this time to do much more than they've ever done in the past, which is, okay, so now we're going to torpedo all the economies of the world.
And I think also, John, that people who normally would not have gone to the hospital with the flu, they just would have stayed home and battled it. They're all going in now. I talked to a doctor in St. Louis, and I said, what's it like in the hospital right now? He said, it's a zoo. I've never seen it this busy. But I said, but during the seasonal flu, do you get a lot of people that come in too? And he said, oh, yeah, we do. So I think what's happening, and this fits your thoughts, that everybody who's getting sick now, they think they have the COVID-19, and they're panicking.
Exactly. I put up an article about a week ago because I said to myself, okay, so let's look at, say, 2018, what was happening in hospitals around the United States. I found an article from Time magazine that basically said, hospitals are overflowing in all 50 states. This was 2018,
jeez,
right, from flu. And they cited examples of one hospital and state after another, and the doctors are out there putting up tents in the parking lot to treat people. And it's like if you just erase the date and you just changed it to 2020, you would say, well, those are the stories that I'm reading in the mainstream press now about this. Yeah, exactly. Exactly the point. You're absolutely right. All these people are now coming into the hospitals because they're terrified that in addition to ordinary seasonal flu, they have the dreaded epidemic disease.
I saw somebody sneeze in the grocery store today, not on any food. He just sneezed, and people ran away like he had the plague. It's incredible. Well, let me ask you this, though. Is there a COVID-19 virus? Is there a new virus out there?
As far as I'm concerned, and chapter and verse on this is in my articles, we don't need to go into all the details. They
right.
never use the proper procedure to say we discovered a new virus. They said they did, but the tests that you're supposed to run in any sophomore in a science class at college could tell you, you've got to really establish this. If you're going to say we have a new virus that's going to cause us to lock down half the planet, you better really prove that you found it. I see no such evidence in the literature that they did the work necessary to establish that at all, period.
Now, here's something that's puzzling me, and maybe this is because it was never reported before with the seasonal flu. But it seems that first responders and medical practitioners seem to be getting this virus, whatever it may be, and they're getting sick and some of them dying. My question to you is, was that still happening with the seasonal flu? We just never heard about it before.
Well, it could very well be, because you don't see these cases. These are the outlier cases that people will always bring up, and they'll say, well, what about the three doctors who died here or the two hospital workers and so on and so forth? Explain that. I say, well, I'm not there. I haven't seen the patient records. I don't know what these people may have been suffering from before this ever happened, Who knows? And yes, this could have happened last year, the year before, never reported in the press. And so it was unnoticed until now.
And until now. Yeah.
It's played up fantastic.
And that's the same with people wearing masks. I mean, with the normal flu, minimal people wore masks last year, the year before that. Now, half the people you look at are wearing masks.
Yes, and in New York, in the empty streets, they're walking down the middle of the street at great distances from each other to avoid any possibility of contact. Now we get into the motivations that I see behind this whole thing, which have to do with enacting hostility, suspicion among people against each other, divide and conquer in a really, really vicious way.
Yes. Yes.
It's just unbelievable.
Who benefits, John? And at what point did somebody concoct, if this theory is correct about destroying world economies, who benefits and what's the game plan?
To me, there are many levels, of course, of benefits that you could enumerate. You know, you could say a pharmaceutical company is going to make a fortune on the vaccine, antiviral drugs, and blah, blah, blah. But when you go higher and higher on the ladder of control, which is what this is all about, it's apparent to me that this is an attempt to usher in a new world, a new kind of world of technocracy, which, in other words, is to say, we had this great shock to the global system. There was, before the pandemic, BP, and after the pandemic, AP, and this marks the end of what we used to know as history. We're never going to go back to the way it was before. This is the kind of propaganda you're already hearing, and we'll hear more of. We have to build a new world. What kind of world? An engineered world. A world, of course, of wall-to-wall surveillance, because we have to detect diseases early before they really spread and happen. We're going to have smart cities. We're going to have the Internet of Things.
Mandatory vaccines. That's going to happen.
Yes. Many, many, many vaccines and new technologies of vaccines. For example, DNA vaccines, as they're called, which, as I've written, permanently change the genetic makeup of the recipients who take the vaccine.
What would happen, John, if the president said tomorrow, I have talked to the 50 governors of the United States, and I am immediately implementing, and they have all agreed to go back to opening up our businesses, our schools, our churches, because some churches are shutting down now, too. You can't go and worship. But we're opening up everything, and we're going back to the way it was. What would happen?
This is the question that I've been posing all along. First of all, he would be, and he knows this, would be, I mean, if you think the attacks on him so far in his presidency were vicious, that would be nothing. That would be a Sunday picnic compared to what would come down on his head, and he knows it. But the overall effect, as far as I'm concerned, would be positive, extremely positive, because what would be revealed is, as Anthony Fauci said back in February in the New England Journal of Medicine before he decided to change his tune once again, this is akin to a severe flu season.
Yes. It's the flu on steroids. That's what I call it.
Right. And so you would see a typical flu-like illness, severe season in the U.S. and in other countries. The country would survive. The economy would survive. It would come back. And overall, it would be an extremely positive effect. I mean, for example, what's happening in India now with the lockdowns there, you and in other countries where you have gigantic numbers of people that live in extreme poverty, you're talking about cutting these people off from food. You're talking about no way. It's not like, oh, we're going to give everybody a check, you know, a digital check.
No, I mean, it's crazy.
Going to die.
It's crazy. And again, 650,000 people worldwide die from the seasonal flu every year. 650,000 people. If they would have said today, 650,000 people have just died from COVID-19, people would be panicking, but that's where they're headed. That's what they want to say.
That's what they want to say. And also keep in mind, as you just pointed out, that 650,000 figure, that's every year. That's
every year, year after year.
Clockwork, every year, every year. So imagine if that were the story being told about COVID-19. You would have people trying to burrow down to the center of the earth to hide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody would be sleeping with masks on.
Exactly.
It's really crazy, John. But my biggest concern is we're coming close to a breaking point. I can feel it with people who have to go back to work again. They have to start earning money. They can't live the way that they've been living over the past several weeks. That's got to change. Will it change?
That does. I don't know if it's going to change, but it has to change. Absolutely. And I have to put part of the blame on these supposed big, tough, you know, macho CEOs of giant corporations who, as soon as this whole thing is announced, instead of saying, wait a minute here, you're trying to tell us you're going to shut down the whole economy and destroy nations, including our nation? No. What do they do instead? They send their lobbyists directly to Washington with their hands out, and they say, well, if you want to give us $50, $75, $100 billion today, sure, we'll shut down. What do we care?
Exactly. John, we're going to take a quick break. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back and talk more. We'll open up the phone lines. John Rappaport, a very respected author, investigative reporter. His website, nomorefakenews.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com.